On Midwest Week, trying to preserve local history and artifacts and architecture. I'm Herb Trix, and my guest this week is Alma Gull, features writer for the Quad City Times. Recently, Alma, you wrote about the Colonel Davenport House, and what prompted that?
Last summer, an Augustana College student, as one of her senior projects, she was a history and art major, and as her senior project, she put together a pamphlet in which she documented where 10 pieces of furniture in the home came from, and also with some money from Augustana donated a piece of furniture, a sewing table that the home did not have, but probably would have had in the Colonel's time, because that's something every home had when they were fixing their own clothing. And so she did that pamphlet last summer, and it was just till this summer that I got a chance to actually write about it and write about the home.
Okay, so why are the furnishings important? And I guess the big question is, remind us who Colonel Davenport was.
Colonel Davenport was one of the founders of Davenport, not the only one, but the city is named after him. He is considered the first white or European settler to this area. He came with the army in 1816, when they established a presence on the Arsenal and Island, which was just Rock Island at the time. The purpose was to, you know, protect European settlers as they came in, taking away lands from the natives. But he stayed then and became a trader, traded with the Indians, and so he was real important in our history. After he died, and see, this is one of the things I think is so interesting about Colonel Davenport and our history, is he was murdered on the island on the 4th of July in 1845. And so, anyway, after he died and his family moved along, the house was eventually abandoned, fell into ruin, and it's had numerous, about three different groups have tried, you know, restoration of it. And it's a really important building in our history, and it's all privately owned, all funded with private donations. You know, there's no government help. So a lot of people are doing a lot of good keeping that going.
And what about the furnishings, Alma? What happened to them after the family moved on?
So that was kind of, it's kind of a mystery. One can guess that they stayed with the family. Some of them, at least, you know, because people just pass on their stuff, especially in times when people didn't have as much stuff as we do nowadays. So his granddaughter, Naomi Davenport, was the last direct descendant, and the curator of the Iowa State Historical Society in Des Moines had kind of quoted her, you know, writing her letters saying, "We'd sure like to have some of your items." So this man came, curator came down after she died, and took a lot of things, and newspaper articles and his own documentation says that they sold a lot of them at auction. So some of his furnishings are just scattered to the winds. We do know that a desk that belonged to him when he was living on the island is at the Putnam Museum, and that a piano and a sideboard that would be like a kind of a china hutch sort of thing that was at the home is at the State Historical Society in Des Moines. But exactly where the other things are, we don't know.
I guess the big question then is, what are the furnishings that are in the house now, and where did they come from?
At one point in time, a group that was refurbishing the house made a concerted effort to buy furnishings, what they call to the period. In other words, they weren't the Colonel's, but they were something from the time that he probably would have had, such as a dining room table and chairs and beds that were held together with ropes and a hutch for china and that kind of thing. So a lot of people with who donated.
Okay, so it was authentic and period stuff, just not directly traceable to the Davenport family.
Exactly.
And something else I found interesting in your article, Alma, was the interesting aspects of the Davenport family. Where did you find out all that stuff?
Well, it's documented. You just sort of shake your head. And one of them is that his two sons, George Lost and Bailey, were children that he had with his wife's daughter. And that was all happening when they all lived together on the island. And that has always struck me as like, well, that's really strange to me. But anyway, that's the case. And I also, you know, found out in time that that Davenport wasn't his real name. His last name was King when he came from England, and he changed it for whatever reason, and why he chose that name, I don't know. Just, you know, a lot of things about him that are, you know, you kind of shake your head and say, well, that's interesting. I wonder if people know that. So that's another reason for writing that story. It's our history, and I know that because I've lived here now a long time and have read these stories, but new people coming in or moving, they need to know these stories too. They need to be repeated, I guess is what I'm saying, at certain points in time. Otherwise, no one knows this, and it's just lost.
Yeah, we sort of forget that these people were real people and not just sort of figureheads,
yes.
You know. Now, you also wrote recently, Alma, about something called Lustron Homes in the Quad Cities, and what makes them so special?
Well, they a real unusual type of home. They were built only 2 years after World War II. They were one man, Carl Strandlund, was his name. He was from Moline. He thought this would be a way to make homes quickly because there was such a lack of housing with all the GIs coming back from World War II and they needed places to live. So he thought he could make these homes relatively quickly and they would be affordable and they would be made out of steel and they'd never need maintenance, you know, because steel would last forever. But actually, that did not happen so much. Within 2 years, he was heavily subsidized by the government with loans. And as he began production, he could not meet the demand. And then they became more expensive than expected. And it just kind of became not a good thing. And the government called in its loans, and the company went out of business. But these Lustron homes have gotten kind of a following across the country. People search them out and, you know, want to know about them. And when we put that story up on our website, it got like, 10,000 or more people read it in one day. And I would guess that many of those are not people who live in the Quad Cities and want to know, but are all across the nation who are just interested in these homes that are made out of steel panels. And they came in certain, you know, they were like three different models, and they came in four different colors, and otherwise they were all somewhat, that they offered different floor plans, but there was a similarity about them. Some people just really like them.
And what are a few of the pros and cons of steel? I mean, you say they theoretically last forever. That sounds like a really good advantage.
It is good. Like the home that I wrote about, Moline, the roof has never been repaired or replaced, so that's, you know, like a 50-year roof, and you know, it's never needed paint on the outside. But on the other hand, you're very limited in what you can do inside because everything is made of steel. And if you want to put lights in the ceiling, which were also steel, you know, you have to drill holes, and it's they were built on a concrete slab. So there's that. I guess you're just really restricted in if you want to change your home. And you know how homes change through the years as people's tastes change or what they want to do. So if you like it the way it is, that is great because it can stay that way. But otherwise, it's hard to change. And also, I find, anyway, that steel is a little cold. It doesn't have the warmth of wood, and that has been a lot of people have tried to take out those steel cabinets and put in wood cabinets because, you know, they think they look nicer and warmer.